Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross at the controls, Chris is at the phones, and Ted, just want to assure you and the rest of the listeners that there is no test today.
That's good.
Even though, yeah, we are talking about IQ today.
Yeah, so I saw that on the cover of the book, and I got nervous.
Yeah. This is generational IQ.
Uh-huh.
That's something completely different. So we'll find out, though, how it's affecting how we live. And it's the title of a new book from Hayden Shaw. We've talked with Hayden before, had a wonderful conversation when his book came out, Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together and the 12 Places They Come Apart. Hayden is a leading expert on helping the four generations work better together. And he's worked with more than 1,500 businesses, nonprofits, and governmental organizations, and also teaches Franklin Covey's best-selling workshops, Leading Across Generations and Working Across Generations. And he writes regularly and speaks on this topic of generations, and we're excited to get him on with us today. So we're going to jump in right away, and welcome back Hayden Shaw to Connecting Faith. Hayden, how are you doing today?
We are doing great.
I'm looking forward to the conversation. I'm working with a Gen Xer and a millennial, so I'm going to have to be taking a lot of notes here just to figure out how we can all get along together.
Well, that's great. Yeah, but getting along together is really the focus of the first book I did, and that Sticking Points. And then as I was researching that, the Tyndale House publisher said, hey, can you do a book on how these generations impact faith? Because, there's all these questions that Christians are asking that generational research helps us raise our generational IQ, and it makes a lot of scary things a lot less scary.
Well, in fact,
that was the second book.
You address it in the subtitle, Christianity Isn't Dying, Millennials Aren't the Problem, and the Future is Bright. And that sounds a little counterintuitive. We'll find out more, because I'm sure there's people listening now that are concerned, say, what can I do? My child's walking away from the faith. Can't get the younger generation to come to church. Some of those things. But let me start out with a little bit, as you kind of address early on, that we're living in a time now where there are additional generations today, right, compared to the previous era. What difference does that make?
Well, I think it makes I think generational differences are the biggest challenge that churches face, for example. I think that's a big difference. 1900, the average mortality was 48. Today, it's 78. That 30 additional years of life is, I think, one of God's great blessings for being alive today. But it makes the challenge in that churches don't adjust to the younger generations as quickly. And now we've got to figure out, how do you keep people across five generations, together in the same church? And we've just literally never had to deal with that before. And you know how it is when it's something you've never dealt with before, we usually don't tend to be too good at it. And so as a result, Neil, it leads to the problem. People are like, we can't get millennials to be interested in their faith or in church. Well, part of that is the church hasn't adjusted as quickly as it would have adjusted in years past, because we've got a number of people in older generations who are like, hey, don't leave us out. And so I don't know that it's anybody's fault. It's just generational IQ helps us see it as, it's not good guys and bad guys. It's, wait, we just got a new challenge here, and we've got to rise to the challenge.
Well, I want to talk about, kind of our spiritual, maybe religious habits, our faith habits. Are they primarily a product of our influences of, our growing up years? So, I mean, if we grew up, you and I probably grew up, where we were kind of tired of the organ music and wanted our hair to grow long, and could we just get a guitar in church sometime, right?
Yeah, our generation fought hard to squeeze the guitar into church, did we not?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the Christian churches and Churches of Christ, which are fairly conservative, and so we It was only Sunday night where you could get a guitar in. And Sunday mornings, it was organs and organs and piano. And then over time, they squeezed the drums in. It took 20 years, but we squeezed the drums in there. And now all the big mega churches play that funky music.
Sure.
And, you know, in many ways, rock and roll is one. Pew Research Center discovered that rock and roll is the one music that all the generations are not offended by. So it may not be what you listen to most, but it's what most advertisers use because it doesn't offend anybody. And so, yeah, no doubt growing up in those worship wars have led to – it's a very different experience than my son has, who's a worship minister in a new church in Rhode Island, where he's like, Dad, our church – and I go to a mega church in Chicagoland. Our church – their music is so old school. All that Lincoln Brewster and Chris Tomlin stuff. Wow, it's all old school stuff. You know, I thought I was going to cough up a lung when my son called contemporary worship music old school.
So what are they playing? What are they using?
Well, you know, it's more like alternative rock.
Okay.
Sounds more like from Mumford and Sons for people who aren't familiar with alternative worship music, and they often change the rhythm and slow songs down. It's funny. I was just in a small church consulting in Southern Illinois this weekend, and it was ironically about a 60-year-old boomer who's like, wow, these young people, can we just speed the songs up? There's drag so much. I almost laughed out loud when the older generation is saying, come on, get us that tempo up. And when you think about it, a lot of Chris Tomlin songs use a similar – the fast songs use a similar tempo to the opening music to Entertainment Tonight. And younger generations often have slower, what they consider more reflective or sacred, tempos to their music. It's just ironic, I think.
You've been studying this for a number of years, and obviously we've talked about, you know, the workplace, how, you know, getting four generations working together, but we're in the world of five generations now, which just adds to the complications. But we want to focus on, you know, the spiritual aspects and even those things about, you know, what if I do if my 20-something's still in the basement, and we'll get to those questions as well. But maybe, Hayden, as way of kind of introduction, we've you know, joked around about a few things, but give us a little snapshot, maybe, if you would, of the generations and some of the uniquenesses of each group.
Yeah, let's do that. So let's first talk ages, because about this time, listeners are thinking, well, wait, what generation am I? Where are the cutoffs? And different experts cut them off sometimes a year or two differently. You know, that you may say, well, they cut it off. You know, they don't have the same year. But it's within a year or two range, typically. Almost everybody cuts the traditionalists off at 1945. And, you know, so they would be people now who are you know, 70 and older, 69, 70. And then you've got the baby boomers who would be in their, you know, early 50s through 70. And then Xers who are around 32, 33, and then up into, you know, early 50s. And then finally the millennials, somewhere around 12 to 14, we'd cut the millennials off if they follow, you know, if that follows the same pattern as the previous generations. Hard to tell with the internet. The internet may make generations more quickly. So who knows? Maybe, you know, there's just not enough survey data out, not enough buying patterns out to know exactly where to start the next generation, which, Neil, I'll answer that question people ask right up front. Nobody agrees on the name of this fifth generation, so I just call them the new generation or the next generation, or sometimes the always-on generation, because they're on technology. They're on some screen within 40 minutes of waking up. So the 0 to 14-year-olds, they're on a screen within 40 minutes of waking up.
And that's a pretty wide range for us to come together around maybe a core set of beliefs. And I know that's one of the things that you're talking about in the book Generational IQ, because obviously passing the faith along is one of the core convictions that we have. But let's talk about what are some maybe core beliefs or core maybe lifestyle habits of these generations.
Yep, you got it. So traditionalists tend to be more conservative on social issues, And traditionalists tend to be more conservative in the way they like a worship service to flow, for example. And traditionalists tend to still have a wait your turn approach to dealing with generational differences. And what do I mean by wait your turn? Well, in past generations, when there were three generations, it was fairly simple. There were the people who had the money and made the decisions. There were the people who had the children and did the jobs that the people with the money and the decisions didn't want to do anymore. I lovingly refer to them as the junk jobs. And then there were the children. So it's pretty simple. The people with the money and the power died at a young enough age that the next generation of adults would take over. And then their kids would raise their grandkids, and anytime you got grandkids involved, we get along with our kids better because we want to see our grandkids. And families, churches would work it out. Well, now that there are four generations and people live so much longer, people are not – waiting your turn may mean waiting until your late 60s or 70s before the leaders of your church or your family have passed, and you can now do it the way you want to. And so now that wait your turn is broken as a way of passing on generational decision making, younger generations look at that and say, why would I wait my turn? It's not disrespectful to ask for what you want now. Older generations often see it as entitlement or disrespect to push for what you want when you ought to just wait your turn because I waited my turn. But what the traditionalists and older boomers don't realize is in the past, you got your turn a lot earlier than people get their turn today, and that process is broken. So that's one of the big differences in how the traditionalists see the world. Now, the baby boomers were the first generation to see church as optional. Half of the baby boomers dropped out of church until church began to adjust. For example, the music adjusted, the style of preaching adjusted, and the quality adjusted. Churches have even smaller churches have a much higher level of quality. I was really impressed, for example, in this church of about 140 I was working with this weekend. I was really impressed with the quality of music. They had a full band, and the band was good. And, it's kind of band that you would expect to see in a church of 400. But the demands for quality, the expectations of quality, what you joked about, Neil, having some organist in mittens trying to pound through a great is thy faithfulness. The boomers that were like, I'm not going to church. And the parents were like, well, you're going to go to hell. They said, no, a good God wouldn't send me to hell because hell is listening to that organist play every week.
You've been listening in on our conversations along the way, I think, somewhere. Yeah, sorry.
And so the boomers are like, you know what? If the quality isn't there, you should go do something else. And so a lot of new churches started with a different approach to church, a more contemporary approach to church. And the secret to that was a higher level of quality of sermon and of music and the amount of preparation it takes. In mega churches, it's not uncommon for the minister to spend 25 to 30 hours a week on the sermon, and it's not uncommon for the worship to have a 20 to 25 hour preparation time total with staff time and the band and vocalist practicing. And I grew up in a church where they picked the songs out about 15 minutes before the church, the organist and the person leading singing. And the minister had spent 3 or 4 hours on a sermon, and it showed. And today we just demand a lot more quality. Boomers, on the other hand, are willing to church hop, and not just because of false teaching, but because of better teaching. And, oh, wow, I love that radio preacher in my community. I'm going to go over to their church. Or I read this book. Or, hey, this minister's got, as they say in basketball, the hot hand. And so people kind of bounce from church to church, and I think that creates some real spiritual weakness in the willingness to bounce because, I think they're such a good teacher. And that'll create some problems long term for boomers.
We'll get our quick break in and then come back, and we'll make it a tease. We'll find out about Xers and millennials here in the next segment of today's program. We're learning generational IQ with Hayden Shaw. Hayden is a leading expert on helping generations work better together. And he has written this brand new book to focus on passing your faith along and some of those important questions. How do you pass your faith along to your children when they don't respond to the things that we find meaningful? Is it even possible for young people to save sex for marriage when they don't marry until age 28? What about my 20-something still living in the basement? We'll talk about those questions and more with Hayden Schatz. We talk generational IQ. The subtitle of the new book is Christianity Isn't Dying, Millennials Aren't the Problem, and the Future is Bright. We've got three copies to give away. It's a great read. You'll enjoy it. Give us a call and sign up for that. Ask a question as well. 877-93-FAITH. 877-933-2484.
Sports.
There we go. We need to pick up the tempo, huh? Please, thank you for that. Hayden Shaw is my guest today. Hayden is, well, he's been called a leadership guru by the Washington Post and an expert on cultural differences at the office by Time Magazine. He blogs about generations and other leadership topics at mygenerationalcoach.com. He's the father of four millennials, lives with his wife in a multi-generational household in Illinois, and he's written a great book called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together and the 12 Places They Come Apart. And we're talking about the new work that he's just come out with. It's from Tyndale House. It's called Generational IQ, and the subtitle catches our attention. Christianity Isn't Dying, Millennials Aren't the Problem, and the Future is Bright. But, Hayden, we were kind of going through some of the core issues, talking traditionalists and boomers, a couple more generations to review. What are some of the core issues of Generation X?
Well, Generation X has some real strengths. Now, because for many of them, family life was a lot more turbulent. The number of working moms doubled, and so some of the expectations, the classic expectations about how families were supposed to be had changed, and the number of families that divorced went from like 17% to 30%, where it's remained today. And so for Xers, stability became a really high value, and so they focused on community. And whereas, you know, intellectual concerns were a big deal to baby boomers, intellectual concerns were less of a deal to Gen Xers. They were more concerned on getting outside the church and living out your faith. And they were not joiners. And so Xers, you know, Xers were a reluctant group to join churches. It took them a while. And they tend to be more cynical because of their experiences and with ups and downs in economy, with a lot more news coverage on the downsides of politicians, they're less trusting and more cynical. And that takes us into – and they grew up in an era where what's true for you and not for me became important. Here's – I know some of you are like, really? It's 1223 and you're going to talk philosophy right at lunchtime? You bet. Because it's really important, I think, for Christian parents and Christian leaders to understand that we're on a shift. The Xers were the shift generation of 500 years of philosophy. And for 500 years, it was all about the scientific method and about assurance and certainty. And then once the Xers, you know, came along, they went to school with certainty and the scientific method posted on the wall in their third grade classroom. And they came out with, you know, people like Petra Feyerabend, a philosopher of science, saying science doesn't know anything, certainly. And 1 + 1 = 2, except when you're in base, you know, it's 4, but when you're in other forms of mathematics, different answers come out of that. And so it just depends on what form of math you're using, and it depends on what vantage point you're looking at. And so Gen X went in to school like the rest of us did and came out with what I lovingly refer to as in the book as true for you and not for me, or philosophically interested people would know it as postmodernism. But basically you see it today where someone says, hey, that's just your opinion and that's fine for you, but you can't go imposing it on anybody else. And we're on the hinge, a 500-year hinge in history. And so the Xers have had to sort out what that means. And that's a huge challenge for them. And it's led them to be much more cynical. True for you, not for me, back off. And then Millennials in the millennial era, that's been taken to a much greater degree. I was listening to a radio show when I was driving one day, and I talk about this in the book where they were asking people, would you rather be this than that? And one of the questions was, would you rather be prejudiced or cannibal? And most people who called in picked cannibal. Now, I don't think anybody should be prejudiced. On the other hand, and it's really hard to find justification for that in Scripture. On the other hand, to say it would be worse to be a cannibal to be prejudiced, that it would be a cannibal. Cannibals eat people. They don't make fun of people. They eat people. So that's just crazy talk. But what Christian Smith, one of the great researchers on religion and young people, have discovered that the greatest sin is to judge someone else. So that's a huge shift. And Miley Cyrus even sings it in one of her songs, where she's twerking along in that rude dancing. But, you know, she's basically where, haters are going to hate, but only God can judge you. Well, no, you're doing some behavior that God's fairly clear about. And if you take scripture seriously, and she grew up a good little Baptist girl. And so basically she's saying, everybody, you can back off. True for you, not for me. And that puts our millennials in a very different world. And a lot of times parents and grandparents are struggling to catch up with the changes in thinking in each generation, and their young people don't make much sense to them.
Mm. I was just thinking, we just sort of talked briefly before the show, but think about those kind of various areas. I mean, in media, I think, well, we had Brian Williams. I don't know if he was a Gen Xer or maybe he's a boomer, but it was kind of, you know, he couldn't remember how much truth he really knew. And, you know, we got Miley Cyrus and sort of influencing pop music. And there's, you know, today we have education leaders who are seem to be bending over backwards for the, as George Will describes, the delicate snowflakes of the college students today that are offended at, the least possible thing. These trends have some big influences on us in a variety of ways, don't they?
Well, definitely. I mean, there's been a lot of attention the last 3 months, and then some of the protests at Yale and then at Mizzou. And I don't think people should be treated badly because of their ethnicity or their race. And so I think people had a legitimate reason to be frustrated. At the same time, the protests that say you can't wear a Halloween costume that I find offensive, or that people should be protected from being offended, and that certain classic pieces of literature – no, let's face it. Literature – a classic piece of literature is interesting because of the conflict, and the conflict is often over values or how people are treated. And to have warning labels on books where you don't have to read this classic piece of literature to graduate from this required literature class because it may stir up feelings in you that are difficult. The rest of the generations look at that and go, all right, now wait. I don't know how you're going to reproduce that in the workplace or in the marketplace. Because the same people who want to be protected in university from bad feelings often turn around and tweet things or say things online that certainly don't protect other people's feelings. And so it is be good, feel good, and live your own life. What Christian Smith discovered is kind of the religion of millennials. It is that what's true for you is not for me, taken to such an extreme that it truly is unworkable as a way to function in a society. I don't know that the millennials are as delicate as Mr. Will thinks they are. They do suffer from higher levels of depression. That's been well established. It's difficult to know if that's because we just report it more or because they're more vulnerable to it. But definitely these philosophies are showing fruit in ways that demonstrate that they lack some substance.
We're going to come back. We're going to come back in a moment and talk more about the be good, feel good, God is watching idea. Talking to Hayden Shaw today about his brand new book, Generational IQ. We got some copies to give away, and give us a call to sign up for one. We're talking about today's generations multiple, and that has added some complexity to our world today that we are not necessarily prepared to accommodate or to deal with, and we can easily worry, which is what many in our generation do, especially as parents. We worry about our children and our grandchildren, and you know, what do we do to pass the faith along? We'll talk about that as we go along here in the second half of today's program. By the way, if you just joined us talking today with Hayden Shaw, Hayden is a leading expert in helping generations work better together. And he's worked in more than 1,500 businesses, nonprofits, and government organizations. He's co-author of a wonderful book called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. If you're in business and leadership in any capacity, you'll want to get a copy of that. His new book, just out from Tyndale, has to do with, well, as the subtitle talks about, Christianity isn't dying, millennials aren't the problem, and the future is bright. We're talking generational IQ with Hayden Shaw. And Hayden, you know, as you know, I'm in the boomer category. Ted, my producer, is a Gen Xer. And I know you say that you know, Gen Xers are misunderstood and invisible. So before I ignore Ted the rest of the day, why is he so invisible?
Well, don't ignore Ted.
Okay.
Xers are invisible for the major reason is they're just small. As I like to joke, if you're an Xer, your parents probably wanted you because the movies at the time the Xers were being born were all about demon children. So horror films tell us what we're scared of. And when the boomers were growing up, we were scared of the big bomb, and so we had Godzilla and Mothra landing. And today, we're scared of terrorists, and so we have zombies. But when the Xers were being born, we were scared of children. And so we had Little Damien and Exorcist, and even our dolls, Chucky, would come and try to kill us. And so we were scared of children. And so the Xers are the smallest of the generations, and as a result, they just don't wield as much political or economic power, and they get overlooked in, you know, every dimension of society. Ted, I just want to take a moment but just a moment, man, and after that we'll ignore you.
Okay.
I just want to take a moment and acknowledge Xers didn't even get to pick their name. Xers were called Xers by traditionalists and boomers and finally just gave up and said, fine, okay. we'll keep the name that means you can't sign your name or the symbol of the unknown, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. All right. Thanks, Ted. You can, you know, just.
Yeah, I'll be over here.
Sure. Okay. If we need you, we'll call you if we need you. All right. So, Hayden, let's jump into, you know, maybe the big questions. I mean, you know, you address it in the book, you know, is Christianity really going to be dead in three generations? I mean, we've sort of touched on it a little bit at the beginning, but, you know, just because we're worshiping in different ways, is that really a concern? Or, you know, should we be concerned about the future of the church?
You know, I think there's all kinds of people who are quoting statistics that don't really help there. Matter of fact, when I was in the last book, I did this big webinar, and I hired a virtual admin to help me run it all. And she said, well, this is so great. You know, I'm a Christian. Does this apply to things in religion? I said, yeah. She said, well, I've heard that Christianity is going to be gone in three generations. I mean, so that is a very common thing for people to hear. And statistically speaking, it's not. I mean, I met with General Dempsey when he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he said, I heard Christianity is just – church attendance is dying. And when the Pope came in, that's exactly what people – Fox News said, come to the special session – you know, special report on Friday night. Christianity has been – dying for decades. Church attendance is down 10% in 40 years. And we hear that the nuns are growing 7%. Well, that's because, as you probably discussed, many people who claim to be Christian never went to church, and their neighbors would have just laughed. You know, the neighbors would have snorted their Coca-Cola right out their nose on the back porch if they had heard the neighbors tell a census person that they were Christian. They're like, really? We see what you do in your backyard. Didn't look Christian to us. And so, you know, people used to claim a religion even when they weren't that because it was socially acceptable. And today, people don't feel like they have to do that. And so it's not dropped nearly as much as the numbers look like, because the numbers used to reflect people who were never really Christian. And so I guess in a weird way, it's good news that Christianity is not as – it's not as bad as we think, because it was never as good as we thought. And, you know, millennials, while they're down some, millennials still believe in God. Now, they believe that the God of the Bible – is also the God of Islam and also the God of Buddhism and also the God of other religions. And that's been a change. But, you know, in many ways, things have not changed nearly as much as we're hearing. Christians love to scare each other with statistics that aren't quite true.
Well, you alluded to it just before the break, or touched on it, that the mantra maybe, you know, be good, feel good, live your life. God is watching. So is the Christianity today of today's generation really the faith of our fathers?
Yes and no. How's that for a helpful answer, Neil? Yes and no.
I can get that from Ted. So.
Yes and no. Yes, it's the same faith. No, it's not coming through the same way. So one of the things that Christian Smith discovered is that when he interviewed, so he's followed millennials from the time they were teenagers all the way through into their 30s, and has recorded this in four different books. He's followed them and followed the same group of folks. And what's interesting is when he asked them questions, when he and the other interviewers asked questions about Christianity, they would often answer theological questions with psychological terms. And so psychology is so dominant. I describe it as kind of the fog that we all think. It's the major way we organize our brains and the major way we think about the world. And, you know, you hear it all the time. Psychologists come on to news shows to explain why and, you know, somebody could kill people or why these shooters could do these tragedies. So psychologists are the experts. It used to be theologians. Now it's psychologists. And so because psychology dominates our thinking, even when people preach the faith of our fathers, it gets refracted through this fog, through the psychological categories. And so people answer with psychological terms. And many psychological terms are helpful for understanding theology, and many psychological terms really distort theology. While understanding that the God of the universe loves us and knows our name and dies for us and gives us spiritual gifts and seals us as his sons and daughters for eternity, while all of those things definitely build a person's confidence and self-esteem, the focus of Christianity is sin and not self-esteem. And so sometimes psychological categories really get in the way of faith of our fathers. So let me just finish with this thought, Neil. I don't worry that Christianity will be gone in three generations. What I worry about is that Christianity that's left gets distorted enough, it's really not worth having. Because a God of be good, you know, God really likes those who are good people and feel good. You know, God really wants us to be happy and live your life. But if we get in real trouble, God will jump in and rescue us, and then he'll back off so we can kind of live our life. I think most people who are rejecting Christianity today are rejecting that and not the real God, because the real God's amazing, and that is lame.
Do we understand, you talk about the focus is on sin, not self-esteem, but the focus is also on sacrifice too, isn't it? Talk about that. I mean, do we, today's generation, maybe all of us are, we have been sort of individualized over the years, and we want it our way when we want it. So do we understand sacrifice?
Well, I don't think so. The boomers are called the me generation. And what the boomers brought us was not only individualism is a good thing. Having to do the job that your father did because your grandfather and great-grandfather did it, you know, that's fairly restrictive. And so the ability to select your own career and pick your own spouse, I think those are good things. And individualism has its real strengths. I think it's one of the founding principles of a democracy. On the other hand, hyper-individualism is, I think, what the baby boomers latched onto and has become, and it's been passed down now through the Xers and the millennials, a hyper-individualism that says, you know, it's whatever makes me happy that matters most. And frankly, I see it in the way we study Scripture when we ask the question of what does this verse mean to you? You know, the question is, what is an accurate interpretation of this verse? And then we, in application, say, and how would this apply to me? But who, you know, really, what this verse means to you isn't even a good question. It's what's this verse mean, and then how do you apply it? But, you know, you can see a more individualized way of interpreting the Bible. And it's led to some people who don't know much about the meat of Scripture, but as I said in the book, they like their Scriptures already pre-digested. They want to melt it down into a shake. They don't want to have to chew on a steak. And there's some things in Scripture that take some work to understand. And I just want something that'll help me get through the day or the week, and there's nothing wrong with that. But Jesus, when he faced some struggles to get through his day, he quoted Scripture, and he knew the meat of it, and that gave him what he needed. And so I think there's some real spiritual weakness in this that comes from this idea of psychology dominates and individualism taken to an extreme. And am I happy? And does it work for me? And am I being fed in my church? And do I really like, you know, I just don't. You just don't date and drop churches and find yourself to be a growing follower of Jesus. It just does not produce spiritual health. And that's hyper-individualism taken way too far.
There's, of course, a move now, isn't there, where people say, well, I love Jesus, just not really into organized religion. And what I really care about is, you know, causes. So if it's feeding the poor, or it's, you know, climate change, or it's any of those things. You know, good news, bad news there.
Well, it is. It's great that people are interested in causes. The difficulty is living with other people in community. I find some people at church to be irritating. And I'm sure they find me irritating as well. And just like I find the woman I love irritating from time to time, and she assures me that I'm irritating as well. And God didn't give us marriage to be happy. God gave us marriage to be holy. And, you know, the book of Ephesians chapter 5 tells us that Jesus, Jesus loves the church. It's his bride, but the bride hasn't been washed. It hasn't been cleansed. It hasn't been perfected yet without spot or blemish. And so when people get frustrated with organized religion, it's like, wow, that's the one thing they, you know, if you just turn to any page in the New Testament, you know, after the book of Acts, when it talks about the church, what you're going to see is imperfect people and imperfect churches causing each other grief and frustration. That's the one thing that the Bible's really clear about is that nobody from any denomination or theology can dispute is that churches are frustrating things. And Jesus happens to be wildly in love with it. The church is Jesus's plan A. He's got no plan B. So we don't have to like the church, but we have to love the church because if we're going to be followers of Christ.
Talking today with Hayden Shaw about, you know, some of the challenges and concerns we have. Often they're rooted in generational differences, but and we maybe don't know enough about the generations to really understand them and how to maybe work through some of those differences, important differences. Generational IQ is the title of the latest book from Hayden Shaw. Christianity Isn't Dying, Millennials Aren't the Problem, and the Future is Bright. And we'll talk a little bit more about it. I do want to talk about some issues of morality as well. That's we want to get into about, you know, what do you do with the 20-something living in your basement? Hayden Shaw has worked with a number of businesses and ministries and nonprofits and government organizations, helping generations work together. He's a business consultant for Franklin Covey, specializing in leadership, trust, and personal productivity methodologies. Great book he's written called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together and the 12 Places They Come Apart, and the new one, Generational IQ. We've got three copies to give away. You can sign up for that. We'll do a drawing at the end of the hour when we have resources available. It's 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Man, that's old music. Chris Tomlin, huh? Wow. Hayden Shaw is my guest today. We were joking about that earlier about Lincoln Brewster and Chris Tomlin. That was so apparently yesterday in worship music. I'm not keeping up, I'll admit it. I still like those guys. Generational IQ is the book we're talking about. It's the latest from Hayden Shaw, so appreciate Hayden's good insights and helping us understand the generations. He's worked with more than 1,500 businesses, nonprofits, and government organizations working in leadership, trust, personal productivity, and he works with religious faith groups as well. And we're talking about passing the faith along, and, you know, one of the areas that we haven't maybe touched on is just concerns about, I guess, you know, maybe morality and motivation, you know, for the parent with the 20-something in the basement and maybe concern that, are they going to actually save sex for marriage? They don't marry until age 28. Those are some concerns that a lot of parents are dealing with today.
Well, they certainly are. First, let's take motivation. one of the biggest concerns parents of 20-somethings have is, or better, better said, emerging adults. One of the biggest concerns they have is, hey, I had a mortgage and a kid at 25 or 26. And my son's still living at home. He's 25. He's on his fourth job. He's an assistant manager at a coffee shop. I just, you know, he didn't finish college. You know, he's got 1 year to go. I don't know what's wrong with him. What's wrong with him is he doesn't know what he wants to do. And so emerging adulthood is a new life stage between 18 and 27, 28 that's been identified in the last 10 years that very few people have heard of. You know, I was speaking for Leadership Network's event for ministers of large churches, and so I asked them, who's heard of it before? And one hand went up out of about 60 people. And that's pretty common. About one out of 100 hands go up. And back in 1890, when the phrase adolescence was coined, most people would never have heard of that. But today, you know, if a parent was treating their 14-year-old with frustration, we'd hand them James Dobson's Preparing for Adolescence and say, hey, you got to understand this. You know, your kid isn't trying to be difficult. And if we don't understand this new life stage between 18 and 27, 28, then we're going to be really frustrated with 20-somethings, with the millennials, when what we're really frustrated with is emerging adulthood. And the fact of the matter is that that people don't consider themselves adults until they're 28. And the older generations, people over 30, agree on surveys that 27, 28 is when you become an adult. And the people under 30 agree that 27 or 28 is when you become an adult. We're in complete agreement on that. And so there's this in-between stage between being an adolescent and a child and being fully adult. And that's what parents are really struggling, and churches are really struggling to figure out. How do you have a conversation with somebody that sees themselves as an adult but doesn't see themselves as fully adult yet? And it's a new life stage, and it's just been identified, and we're all struggling to deal with it. Now that we live 30 years longer, you would expect there to be more life stages, and so that's a struggle.
Yeah. Before we talk morality, I guess it brings up the question, is there something churches maybe should do differently? They sort of tend to stop youth ministry right at the college, right?
Well, I would say it is easy to see the most underserved population in any church are those in their 20s. More than that, 18 to 23-year-olds, even if they were in the high school youth group when they graduated high school, 71% of 18 to 23-year-olds drop out of church for at least a year. And so, yes, churches need to do something differently. And here's the most surprising thing in my research, Neil. The most surprising thing for me is that if we can find an adult who is not the parents to just stay in contact with that 18 to 23-year-old, just a text message every other week, and then a hello when they're back in the summer for school or they see them, it cuts the dropout rate from church in half with just that. And so I think the smartest thing we can do is to make youth ministry go on till 23 instead of 18. Just because that's how the school system does it doesn't mean that's the safest thing for this high-risk age group. And I'm not saying you take them all to Six Flags, a junior higher at seventh grade and a 22-year-old. All I'm saying is that one of the sponsors kind of stays with the graduates and just checks in on them. That simple thing would make a big impact in people's lives. What 20-somethings want most is mentors, and what they want most are people who will be authentic about the questions that they have and will let them think out loud. And if parents will let young people think out loud, and if mentors will let young people think out loud, it doubles the chances they remain in the faith. It's just amazing.
Well, as you talked about high risk, say a few words about kind of the morality side of things. That's another big concern for parents.
Well, it is. As a matter of fact, a colleague of mine at Franklin Covey grew up in Baptist grade school and high school, and good boy. And then he got off into university and went wild. And he said, I was like 28 years old. I woke up next to a person who I didn't know very well and felt really hollow and empty inside, and began to find my way back to God and to a celibate lifestyle. And You know, he said to me, I just wish somebody, when they had said you shouldn't do it, would tell you how you shouldn't do it. He said, all I heard was don't. What I didn't hear was, now here's how you don't. And I think, Neil, there's a couple, I'm glad that churches talk more about sex and more about the facts of life, but there's another fact of life, and you mentioned it. People don't marry till 28 on average. Men don't marry till 28 on average, and in cities it's often 30 or 31. And so, what we haven't taught, you know, Jesus demonstrated it is possible to be celibate and happy. But, boy, we live in a sex-saturated world where that doesn't even seem realistic. And so churches don't talk about the other facts of life, which is how do we do it? And I think that's a key conversation. Matter of fact, we could spend a whole hour on just that topic of what is it that we need to do to be able to counter just the sex-saturated world that we're in. And sex gets talked about all the time, but parents and churches often feel uncomfortable talking about it. And that sends the wrong message to our sons and daughters and to our young people that as if our, you know, the older generation's heads were in the sand. And it's just that we don't know what to say now that the world has changed and marriage has been pushed back farther than we're used to.
Well, if we had another hour, it would be great. But since we only have about 3 minutes left, I thought maybe I'd give you a chance to do a summation. As the subtitle of the book talks about, Christianity isn't dying, millennials aren't the problem, and the future is bright. That's the subtitle for the book, Generational IQ. Say a word about the future being bright. What are you hopeful about today?
Well, I think... I think that the future can be bright. That's what I wanted to title it. The publisher said, you know, that seems a bit wishy-washy. And because I do believe that it's not nearly as bad as we hear. And I do think we could, I do think Christianity could decline significantly over the next 50 years. I think generational intelligence really is a key ingredient to the future being bright. If we can learn some things about the different generations and deal with what I think is the biggest challenge facing the church, as we talked about in the first part of our time together, if people can get some more generational intelligence and they can understand how the thinking has changed, as we've talked about this last hour, and they can begin to ask some, have the conversations that this new life stage of emerging adults need, there's no reason the future can't be bright. There's no reason Christianity has to move the same direction as Europe. There's no reason that has to happen. And a generational IQ could make a huge impact in our families and in our relationships and in our churches.
Well, and we still have to, I guess, learn how to get along with each other in relationship at whatever stage or age, right? That's it comes down to that, right? Just getting through over some of the rough edges and maybe a little bit of forgiveness and humility.
Well, I did a sermon, and the senior minister that evening, back in the days of Sunday Night Church, when I was a youth minister, I did a sermon, and the senior minister did a rebuttal of the sermon and said, generational differences don't exist. It's a heresy. And everybody was like, after the, you know, he just left then, and after the, threw a bomb and left. And after the worship service was over, people came to comfort me, except my landlord, a woman named Lola, and she said, you know, he's right. Psychology isn't the same thing as the truth. And, you know, she's a wonder. She was a good, godly woman trying to protect our young people with the truth. And it's so funny when she came by to get a copy of Sticking Points to give to her son. And I said, Lola, how did you make this shift? She said, God showed me through my grandkids that you can wear flip-flops and you can listen to rock and roll music and you can still be deeply dedicated to Jesus. She said, I'm just glad that God is gracious and he can teach us 75-year-olds to look differently and to love people. She said, my question now is it a thus saith the Lord or is it just my generational preference? I think Lola teaches us how to love.
Good words. We'll wrap it up there. And you can find out more. Hayden, what's the website? Where's a good place to connect with you and your writing?
On the religious side, www.christianityisnotdying.com tells all about the book. And for churches, I created 7 videos that a staff or a board or council can use to understand how to reach the younger generations and what to do with 5 generations, and then questions to answer and talk about for discussion. So it's a free resource for church staffs and boards.
We'll look it up, and we'll do a connection on our website as well, ChristianityIsNotDying.com. It's a great new resource from Hayden Shaw. Hayden is author and a speaker, business consultant, and leader, helping businesses, nonprofits, churches, helping us all with some great insight today. Generational IQ is his latest book from Tyndale House. Hayden, thanks so much for giving us an hour. We so appreciate the insight you've shared with us.
I always love joining your show.
Hayden Shaw, join us today. If you missed part of the show, you can catch it online. We post the interviews afterwards on the show page at myfaithradio.com. Then click on Connecting Faith.